号。哇哦。
Nice calypso groove there.
Well, we're welcome to Dr. Fred Bell's Health, Science, and Energy Show. Tonight we have Randy Masters. Last week we had Steve Barish. Both of them participated in the most amazing, amazing seminar. We almost levitated people and had a lot of fun. Randy does the sound. He has the most amazing hydrogen sound generators that we sell a lot of those to you people out there. Randy is a professor from the University of California, Santa Cruz, and has been a teacher of some great, one of his students, Peter Rapleson, writes for Madonna now. His students, like, become rock stars. Are you there, Randy?
I'm here. Thank you, Fred.
Are you there?
I'm actually here.
There.
Yeah.
God, how are you doing, man?
I'm doing good. Playing a lot of music today, and I got spread out of here a whole bunch of tuning forks so that hopefully some of these will come across over the phone.
Yeah, yeah. Let me hear a tuning fork.
Here's one. Here's a low one. Let's see if this comes across, a little sound check.
Okay.
Can you hear that?
I didn't hear that. Turn that up a little bit more.
Well.
Yeah, I heard that one.
These are pretty low. I don't know if the phone will pick them up.
Get it closer.
Well, here, I'll play a high one. Just a second.
Okay.
Hear that one okay?
Pleiades on that one.
Yeah, can you hear that one okay?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, it's just the low ones that I don't know if these phones can pick up some of these low register frequencies or not.
Yeah, we're getting them.
I had some interesting things here laid out. But anyway, I got some other ones that we can hear.
I'm impressed.
I have taken a lot of the sacred cubits from the ancient Egyptian measurements and converted them into sound. And there's some interesting things that are revealed when you do that. Slim Spruling had talked about a lost cubit, one that Hans Becker talks a lot about.
Right.
Yeah, 177 megahertz, basically, and a sacred qubit of 144. So he said that this lost qubit had some relationship to the DNA. So in playing around with it, I think I found exactly what that relationship is to that, which would imply then that buildings constructed with that unit of measurement would have some kind of a harmonic resonance with our DNA.
Yeah, let me tell you something. You know, talking about DNA, you know, now what I've been doing lately, we did a little of it as a seminar. What I've been doing lately is that I had Michio Kaku on, who was like the hot theoretical physicist of the world. But the main guy that's really been around longer than Michio, that worked with John Wheeler and John Tehoeft, and his name is Leonard Susskind. And he's teaching, you can look him up on, Leonard Susskind is like, I've got his newest book right now, The Battle Over the Black Holes, with Stephen Hawking. And, he's coming on the show. I think in the future we're going to have him as a regular. He's a professor, emeritus at Stanford University. It's probably, the West Coast equivalent of Michio of the East Coast. And he's committed to, he's over at Cambridge right now, and he's into sound, and he was one of the founders of the 10 levels of the string theory. And I think that we'll get, the ideal thing is to get you and me and him on a show one night.
Well, that'd be fun.
Oh, yeah, and I think we're going in that direction. I mean, I am getting cooperation now, unbelievably so, of the most famous nuclear physicist in the world and cosmologist in the world coming to BBS. I'm absolutely honored that these people, because it's an arrogant society in cosmology, as you know.
Mm-hmm.
You probably know that quite well, right, Randy?
Yes, definitely.
Yeah. And these guys, the ones that are coming on, are not the arrogant ones, they're the smart ones. To me, the arrogant ones are the ones that are stupid. So anyway, I want you to go over what you did on Sunday, at the at last June 6th at a seminar, explain to everybody out there that wasn't there what you were doing with sound, because we're getting a lot of feedback from the seminar. And, you know, people out there that... last week we had Steve Barish on, who talked about the healing aspect and what he did. And this week we want you on here, as you're obviously here, to talk about what you were doing with sound, because the sound had a profound effect on everybody.
Oh, I'm happy to hear that.
Yeah.
There's a... What I demonstrated, the first thing I demonstrated, I believe, was inspired from your Rays of Truth book, because in the part where you're talking about the hydrogen molecule going through the phase shift from red at sunrise to violet at sunset, I was teaching a class once, and that really hit home to me. So in the middle of the class, I did the math on the board and took a couple of hydrogen wavelengths that are spectral wavelengths from the visible Balmer series.
Yeah, and explain who the Balmer is.
Well, John Jacob Balmer was a physicist who discovered a theoretical formula for the visible spectral lines, and of course they do a spectral burn and can measure what the, in nanometers or angstroms, what the wavelength of those are. And there's a total of 34 visible lines of hydrogen, 31 of which are all different wavelengths in microtones of violet, which I find very interesting.
Well, violet, you know, as we say, Randy, that the butterfly sees into the violet spectrum. And the violet spectrum, opposite of the fly who sees it infrared,
mm-hmm.
is the angry part of energy. The violet is the lower part, and that's the doorway to the astral plane, the plane that connects us to recently departed, recently connecting, coming in, where you dream, those kinds of places. So the Balmer series of, you know, sound, you know, like what I tell people, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, is that if you spend 5 minutes playing one of your Balmer hydrogen chimes before you go to sleep, there ain't going to be no nightmares on the horizon. You're going to be so tuned in to your sleep, because it just detoxes you sound-wise from the horns, detoxes you from all of the horrible sounds that we hear all day long.
Yeah, that break up our fields.
Yeah, just pick up from that.
Well, so in that Balmer series, there's one red, and then there's a cyan blue, both of which happen to be in the rainbow. When the sunlight goes through a quartz prism, two
right.
of the Balmer lines are right there out of the nine spectral lines in the rainbow, which was a confirmation for me. So, and then there's a blue-violet line, and then from that point on, 31 more spectral lines are all different micro shades of violet. So what I decided to do is pick one of them that was in a phi ratio to the red, because I figured if the red was represented 1 and a violet line was 1.6 representing the phi ratio, that would probably be the one intuitively.
Yeah.
And then the Balmer M3 and Balmer M6 are exactly...
Hold on, man. You got some for the newbies out there. The phi ratio is the sinusoidal waveform from, if you imagine a straight line, like I'm drawing here with my fingers, and then a positive sinusoidal curve of the sound, and then negative of the sound, sinusoidal curve, and then looking at in a ratio that in wavelength, you know, with a circle, because these sinusoidal waveforms form a perfect circle, that's called a sinusoidal curve in physics. Go on now. Sorry to interrupt.
Yeah,
I want everybody to be...
That's great.
Yeah.
So it just happens that these two Balmer lines are exactly in the most harmonious musical phi ratio, which is exactly 8 to 5 or 1.6. The phi ratio mostly geometrically is 1.618 with a whole bunch of decimals.
That means we're defining wavelength for the hydrogen atom, meaning that we're making these curves, we compress them, or we expand them. So what Randy is describing here is a compression or an expansion of these sinusoidal waveforms, which forms a perfect sound in a circle. So that's what does that make sense?
Yeah,
right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, okay.
And
you know what? We got a lot of newbies coming on, and you're a physicist. I'm a physicist. I want everybody to understand that the sine wave goes and I'm doing this because I'm on TV and I'm demonstrating for people to see this. And what happens is he's defining like, that's what we're defining. And that's what we were talking about with these formulas. Okay, go ahead now. And these formulas, by the way, correspond to human DNA, human consciousness. And the secret when you get in the Balmer series is to find the right formula signature that works for your DNA that makes you feel good and gets rid of stress and horrible vibrations. And Randy makes the product, which we sell here at Paradigm, he makes the proper energy signatures with his chimes, with his tuning forks, to make that happen in your body. If you don't have that, then you never can get like centered sound-wise, and sound is very important. Is that correct or not?
Yes, and I feel that the key to it is like in geometry, the tetrahedron is the building block, and then it's motion and toroidal fields and such, but in...
Okay, now let me stop you there. When we look at a tetrahedral form, like he's talking about, we're making a sinusoidal, we're looking at a tetrahedron, like a pyramid on top and a pyramid on the bottom, and we're taking a imaginary line and we're starting out at the bottom, which is a little peak, and we're making a circular motion around this bottom pyramid, which gets bigger and bigger to the equator of the pyramid, and then which is where the top tetrahedron meets the bottom, and then we're getting to a smaller and smaller ratio, and that's called the Balmer series. So the sinusoidal waveform is created from the bottom of the tetrahedron, you know, this imaginary sound going around the peak to the middle to the top is what we're talking about. That's called the spectrum. Okay.
So as you mentioned, the reason I brought up tetrahedron is because I feel that that's the equivalent of what hydrogen represents in the elements. The tetrahedron represents as a building block. So hydrogen is the building block for all of the other elements.
Right.
If we can communicate with and to hydrogen and from hydrogen, then basically we can communicate to the rest of the physical universe.
Yeah. And also the tetrahedron is the same as chloroform. You know, it's the same as the plant. You know, the plant?
Yeah. The state gemstone in California, bonitoite, which is a beautiful stone when it's faceted, actually forms double tetrahedrons. And I've seen them, and I have a couple of them.
Yeah.
Very interesting. But getting back to these hydrogen lines, then, and communicating with the other elements, I figure that if I could make sound tubes and tuning forks tuned to these Balmer notes, then we could... through the sound at any time, somebody could become harmonious in the field with what that hydrogen element is. And that's speaking to the whole body. It speaks to the rest of the mineral kingdom. And so then you mentioned in your book that the hydrogen red and violet pivot on green.
Right, so, that center frequency, thyroid.
And there's no green-colored lines of hydrogen, but if you average the red and the violet together and take the mean of those two, red plus violet divided by two, you get a green.
Right.
And
exactly.
So that's how I got that. And then the ratio between them is if red represents 1, green represents 1.3, and violet represents 1.6. So for listeners now think, well, what does 1.3 mean? Basically, it's phi squared, or 1.618 squared, divided by 2, will give you 1.3. And so the red represents 1, the green represents phi squared, divided by 2, and the violet represents phi. So in terms of shape and geometry, that's a fractal. And so this is like a whole number of fractal. And also, 1.3 and 1.6 are all isotopes in hydrogen that move from 1 and go each increment. It's like 1, 1.1, 1.2, all the way up to 1.6. And so there's 3 of them out of those 6 or 7 ratios that are found in the isotopes of hydrogen that these particular ratios of my tubes represent. So mathematically, it even speaks mathematically into the field in an appropriate way. It speaks in terms of shape, and it speaks in terms of very harmonious musical ratio. So the math lines up with the colors that line up with the sound that line up with the elements, And note a lot of correspondences that I believe are profound.
Oh, I think it's brilliant, you know. Explain about, you know, look, explain to the audience a little bit about Balmer and what he did back. You know, I'm writing this book, you know, the new book, Inside Track, and I'm going to have him in there, but he was about 100 years ago. Explain.
Yeah, in the late 1800s.
You're explaining now but where we're at with science and physics, but explain how we got there.
Well, you know, he discovered this algorithm for the hydrogen lines. I'm not sure exactly what his process was. But what's really interesting about that algorithm is that when you get all done and you look at the ratios that are involved mathematically to produce the wavelengths that he was able to test and prove that that's what they are, they're all musical ratios, every single one of them. And one of the ratios is a small tone. It's 81 divided by 80. It's called the syntonic comma in music. That's the ratio that's used back from the days of Bach and before and earlier.
Yeah, can I just stop you right here?
Yeah.
Okay. This is an important stop. I want you to explain to people out there that are listening, and my shows are archived. We have more archive listeners than we do now. Explain to them how you worked with Cal Jader and how you played the trumpet. And explain to them, you know, a little bit about your personal music background before you became the professor. Tell us about, because the audience, I really want this on record, this is recorded. Explain to them the bands you work with and the kind of music you made.
Well, my whole introduction into this was, you know, when I was born in Las Vegas, I used to, as a child, go and hear all these great musicians play. So I got to hear fantastic music, so I think that set the tone.
What?
That set a good tone for me, definitely, to pursue music.
Was it your dad or somebody that owned one of the first?
My uncle owned and built three of the clubs there.
Yeah.
So I got to hear people and was inspired by them. So as soon as I was able to be big enough to start playing an instrument around second grade, I started playing with the piano. And then by the fourth grade, I got into the trumpet. And then by high school, I added the guitar and then later percussion and vibes and bass. And, you know, every so many years, I'd add additional instruments into my repertoire.
Right.
And then I started composing in high school. And so initially I wanted to write music for films. So I'd write all kinds of hypothetical songs that could be used in films, and I wrote hundreds of them. And then later on, in playing jazz, I started bringing some of this music into my jazz performances until I developed an original repertoire of music.
Where'd you play jazz at, anyway?
Mostly on the West Coast, and
where at? Like what clubs? Or
like the Great American Music Hall in San Francisco, the El Matador in San Francisco, different universities.
Classic places.
Those, pardon me?
These are now considered classic venues.
Yeah, yeah. And that's where, you know, I had met Cal Jader, and actually what inspired me is that I wanted to compose for him.
Yeah.
So, you know, he had me sit in and featured me a lot, and I wrote a lot of music, but unfortunately he died before we could record it, but I wrote a couple albums worth of music for him, and Charlie Bird, too, and we performed where I was a musical director for Charlie Bird. I put a six-piece group together of totally my own music. And what gave it a unique flavor is that I studied world cultures, Brazilian, Caribbean, African, Indian, Japanese, all these different world cultures was sort of my specialty. So when I started composing, I'd compose in that world music type of a jazz fusion.
Now, what year was this?
Starting in the 60s.
Yeah. See, now, that you know, what I call the classical, you know, world vibe or the cultural sound really never caught on till probably mid to late 80s.
Yeah.
You're so far. Now it's very in vogue to do that kind of stuff, including my own recordings that I do. But, I mean, you're back in the 60s doing this, so you were basically looking at a genre that was about 20 years before the time it really happened.
Yeah, it was definitely ahead there, and, you know, I played concerts for every piece was from a different culture.
I want the audience to get to know you, because I want to have you on more shows, to understand that you had a vision and you worked with world-famous people 20 years before the genre was, like, popular.
The common denominator between the science that I'm doing now and that world music is that I was looking for common denominators. I was looking for the common spark.
Yeah.
So I could take write a Japanese melody and put a Brazilian rhythm with it, or an African rhythm.
Brilliant. And that's what's so acceptable. You know, that's where we're at today.
These things are obvious musically, and I'm surprised that a lot of people haven't really picked up on that.
Okay, hold on. We got a caller now. Hello?
Yeah, Fox Cardell. This is Dave up in Everett.
Who is it?
This is Dave from Everett.
Oh, how are you doing, man?
Pretty good. And you said one thing that I really got to repeat, and that's your archives.
Yeah.
I've downloaded about, I'd say, 70 hours of your shows, and every time I drive around, I'm listening to Dr. Fred Bell.
Yeah.
And repeating the shows and learning more and more. My question was kind of, you were talking about hydrogen earlier in this conversation, and there's water units that now alkalize the water and give you a pH of 9 or 10. And I've heard conflicts of that's good or bad. Dr. Lynn Horowitz's material said that you should have, like, water of a pH of 10. And then you mentioned in a couple of your archives something about, like, 5.5 or 6.5.
It's 6.5 to 7.5.
So is it bad to take too high an alkaline of water?
Well, I would keep it, the acid and alkalinity in that range. What do you think about that, Randy?
Well, when people's bodies get too acidic, there's times when you're drinking a high alkaline pH water can help bring their body out of the danger zones of where it gets too acidic. It doesn't mean that they would continue drinking water a lot that's of a high, you know, like up in the 8 and 9s. But I think in an emergency situation and to immediately pull somebody out of a dangerous health zone where they're way too acidic and their body could be producing a lot of other artifacts, you might say, from that acidity, that certain of the waters that are made, I think that's where their specialty is. I don't believe that those designer waters are designed as, you know, at the daily intake that somebody's drinking, you know, to be drinking 9 1/4 or 9 1/2 or more pH. But the pH factor is a huge, huge part of the health equation. We could do a whole show just on what pH means. And, of course, pH is measuring hydrogen in the body.
Would it be harmful, then, if somebody was continually drinking a 9?
I would think so. Wouldn't you, Randy?
I don't know. I know some people who are, you know, real experts in that part of the water that I would certainly want to check with in terms of how much could somebody take that, because they certainly, you know, if they're measuring their pH and monitoring it to keep it in that, you know, 7.4, 7.5, et cetera, zone, at least above 7, I think is what most people are talking about is the target that they're going for, the healthiest possible zone where diseases can't manifest typically in the body because they don't grow in an alkaline environment. So, but to have too much alkalinity, as far as I understand, could be a problem. But I think temporary intake to bring something out of the 4s, or let's say, or bring it from 5 and get it back up to 7, you know, I've done that.
Earlier, Dr. Bell, you were talking about ozonated water, and you said, you know, take it for a little bit because it's really a poison, but it kind of kills things, and you don't want to keep killing things, so it's not killing you. And so I didn't want to, you know, do that with the alkaline water.
No, the ozonated water is O3, okay? The alkaline water is O2 plus, you know, whatever radical that would bring it over to acid or base, you know. So I wouldn't worry about that. O3 water, ozone water, is in another completely different league than what we're talking about with normal water.
All right. Now, any mention of Judge Miller? We talked last time. You said try to get a hold of him for future shows.
Yeah, I haven't had him on for a while, but we're getting people are going down to his archives where he's been on my show, and they're downloading a lot of stuff. Yeah, we'll bring him back on. It's coming. But right now, the shows have been working. We're coming out with a new book called The Inside Track, and I'm working with the world's foremost physicist to explain the hottest thing on the planet right now, which is quantum entanglement. So that's where the show is probably going to be focused till the fall. once the book comes out, then we'll refocus back on some of the legal issues in this country. But that's not where the show is focused right now.
I might mention also in terms of the water,
yeah,
something to be aware of is the total dissolved solids, because a lot of bottled waters have a extremely high content of total dissolved solids in them. Ideally, if you had like distilled water, would have none, no total dissolved solids. But some of the bottled waters are up in the 100, 200 range, and compared to tap waters that sometimes even go up to 400. And that certainly is a concern, especially certain bottled waters that we might think are safe to ingest that have ridiculously high content of material in it that you don't want getting into your body.
Right. I was just thinking more of the filters on the market. And like I said, I've heard a lot of stuff about, you know, pH from Dr. Fred Bell's show and others. And it was, you know, sounds like a good idea. But then sometimes too much of a good thing can not be good.
Yeah, exactly. The professionals that I know in that area of specialty, you know, would say the same thing you did.
Okay, well, thank you.
Thanks for coming on the show. We appreciate your input. Okay, continue, Randy.
So, you know, going back to these use of these tubes, and once I found that green there, then, you know, in different workshops, I've had two of the tubes being played, like the red and the violet together, and then I'd add the green. But even if I didn't play the green tube, the other two are producing that sort of as a shadow note, as a summation note or some indifference tone. But the best effects I found is by playing all three of those different tubes together.
Okay, now, can I stop you for a minute, sir?
Yeah.
Okay, let me explain what he's talking about. This is how it goes. All right. You're standing there by yourself, erectly, up, straight up, and there's three people surrounding you, okay? You're standing there by yourself in a room. There's a person, say, you know, to your right. There's a person to your left. And there's a person, you know, in between those two, and they're equally designed about 270 degrees. What they do is they start... Each person, you're standing there, and you're surrounded by three people, and these big, long, beautiful, syndrilical chimes are being, you know, held by each person. They're quite heavy, they're not too heavy. And so the first person starts hitting this chime with a kind of a, like a drumstick with a buffered...
it looks like a vibraphone mallet.
Yeah, like a mallet, you know. But it's like a piece of, you know, cotton on the end. And the second person starts hitting theirs. And the third person, finishing the circle, hits theirs. And they start hitting them very low amplitude, not too hard. And you start hearing this sound inside of you, like swirling it around and around. And then they hit them harder and harder, as Randy, you know, is like the conductor. And pretty soon they're hitting them very hard. And you're in this circle with these three people with each set of chimes slightly to a different character frequency of the hydrogen atom. And, you know, it's like you talk about quantum teleportation. People in their minds must go to many places. I did. I could go anywhere. When I was surrounded by that, instead of beep, beep horns or people talking, when I was in this, because I had this happen to me, I could actually... go, I was like a little baby. I could go to a little baby. I could be growing up. I could go anywhere while this energy continuum of sound, and then they start resonating, you know, they start, you know, changing, you know, getting in synchronization of how they hit these chimes, and you're gone. You know what, Randy, I'm setting up my studio. We got to come down here with surround sound and record that.
Yeah. And you could phase them and create different phases between the different speakers with these.
Yeah, and there's nothing.
These notes traveling across the room.
Nothing like it. You talk about the hologram, and it's a hydrogen. Your oxygen, hydrogen, nitrogen, carbon. And the hydrogen atom is the atom of consciousness. The whole quantum physics is based on that. Even classical physics is based on most of it. I mean, it's incredible.
Well, that's why I pursued it, and my studies of the pyramids show that, you know, it's primarily everything you want to know about hydrogen could be learned from the proper study of the pyramids.
Yeah. But I mean, people don't, you know, it's like this is not a stereo. You're standing there, the three people standing, you've got these chimes like 4 feet long, some of them. You know, they're huge. Right?
Now, you mentioned, you know, that when people get jet lag, you know, that they're out of phase with the hydrogen molecule in
their
body.
Yeah, exactly, because their astral bodies takes 2 weeks to catch up with them.
So eventually I'd like to see how these chimes and tubes and all in recorded sound could be played in such a way to help people counterbalance from the jet lag.
Exactly.
There must be a way of delivering the sound in the environment. Even I could imagine them being played on planes or some way that in that sound field would remind people or remind the hydrogen atom in them to reset for a new location or to get reset back to their original location.
No, I agree with that 100%.
Now, when you were, you mentioned when you were up on a Pleiadian ship that they played hydrogen tones to you.
Yeah.
Was it color and sound both?
Yeah.
And did in listening to the Balmer chime or these hydrogen tubes, was there anything that...
Well, you know how that kind of goes like... Wrong. You know, when you hit up the hydrogen chimes that we sell so many of those for you. You know, it's 34 chimes, right?
Right.
And the lower frequency is the lowest part of the spectrum. It's like, you know, it's like when I had Michio Kaku on my show, who was world famous as a theoretical physicist. He was saying, you know, everything. Even, you know, in string theory, down to the original string. Now, the original string, the way he's describing it, is just beyond the Planck length, which is 10 to the minus 33, okay? For people out there, something below that, we have cosmic foam in physics, which is basically before the Big Bang. Each cosmic foam, in that small of a distance of energy, all concentrated energy of everything, creates Big Bangs all over the place. Beyond that, we have 10 to the minus 33, the Planck length, which was supposedly all energy in the universe concentrated to the creation of the Big Bang, which then went out for billions of miles. So when you look at that, you know, from the perspective of what we're talking about, we're coming very close to that very original primordial sound of the Planck length.
And I've also made tubes from one of the frequencies that they measure that come out of the black hole, which is 3.17 times 10 to the minus 15th ferritometers.
Yeah.
And I took that up 50-some octaves, and it makes a very nice B-flat note. But then what I also did...
That's really cool, because I play a B-flat clarinet. I love it.
It's a very good B-flat.
That's amazing. That's my favorite tone. In all signatures of all instruments, the B-flat clarinet, I started playing in the sixth grade.
Well, it's down around there. You end up as close to about 456 hertz plus a little bit.
Yeah.
And then I took the reciprocal of that, or one over that frequency, and then octavized it to create a complementary note to go with it, which I just kind of affectionately call the white hole or the black hole reciprocal, because I do feel for any of these notes, we also have the opposite of these notes. And that's like the front of the hand and the back of the hand.
Well, the back of the hand in physics we call it dark matter.
Well, Ed Gardner wrote a book called The Harmonic Orb, Reflections of the Heart, many years ago. He worked for the National Atmospheric Research.
Yeah.
And he used rare gases and things. And he considered...
Noble gases.
Yeah. And he considered the unseen part of nature. He called it the night side of nature. He wrote a whole chapter in his book called The Night Side of Nature, which I really feel... was very poetic.
Yeah.
And so the night side of nature musically would, if you considered audible overtones to be the day side, in other words, the easily visible or easily audible and heard, the night side would be the undertone series, which moves the opposite direction. So a lot of times I pair an overtone with its undertone, so which is really like one over that in frequency or octave. Sometimes then I'll octavize it because some of these would be so low, you know, be below one, and we certainly can't hear anything at least below 16 for the most part. So I will take reciprocals and then octavize it. For every single note that I have out there, I always look at its reciprocal as being part of the whole picture. And a lot of people don't do that. They only look at one part of the equation.
Yeah, see, when you look at all of the equations, then you're looking at it as a quantum, you know.
Yeah.
The difference between classic physics, which is like, you know, you turn the temperature up and you burn your hand. Oh, it took, not, you know, 105 degrees to burn your hand or whatever. A quantum physics says, you know, something happened over here when you did something over here with energy. And so you're looking at sound from a quantum level, which nobody, you know, everybody's been discussing sound from a level of electrons or photons. You're describing it from the motion of air, by, you know, which what sound is all about.
A wave and a particle simultaneously.
Right, which is quantum, because, you know, if you have a slit, you know, in a hole in a piece of paper, and an electron goes through there, or a photon goes through there, it goes through the back, it hits the back of the target, and it wiggles all around. Now, is it a particle or is it a wave? Because it moves so fast. If it's a wave, it defies Einstein's relativity that describes the motion of an electron being at the speed of light. Whereas when it hits a wave, it's no longer describing that because it's instantaneous. And that's why physics has gone in two directions, classical and quantum. Mm-hmm. Quantum is where we are because it explains everything and doesn't limit us to anything.
To me, where all of this comes together in music and light and color is a combination of quantity and quality working together.
Yeah.
And it's very interesting that there are certain frequencies that Ibrahim Karim discovered in biogeometry. He's an architect in Egypt and has a lot of background in radiesthesia and various things. That one of the this lost qubit was quoted as 177 megahertz and the one sacred qubit at 144. Both of those numbers are numbers that evoke the qualities of gold on the spiritual levels. There's a whole series of numbers that have been found in Egyptian measurements that...
You know, let me tell you the karma on this. Today I received a gold nugget from a person who is funding my X1 project. I'm looking at it as I speak. The person that sent this to me is by the name of Jonathan Bronson. And I'll just read something now, right where you're at. Karma, right? 30 years, master sculptor Jonathan Bronson has been collected by Presidents Ronald Reagan, George Bush Sr., Prince Philip, Winthrop Rockefeller, Jean DuPont, discriminating VIP collectors worldwide, with sculptures in the White House, Capitol Building, Smithsonian, Windsor Castle, Ferrari, museums, collections in 120 countries. Bronson has been acclaimed by critics and the public alike as a living master. Juried to represent the U.S. at world's top wildlife and Western art exhibits, voted People's Choice at the World's Fair, official sculpture of 2002, Winter Olympic downhill skier, gold ring, snowflake sculpture, sold out on the Olympic website and shown before each NBC broadcast to record an audience of 3.5 billion. Randy, he has just backed all of my projects.
Wow.
Everything that I'm into. And I have a gold nugget that arrived today from one of his gold mines that came today.
Amazing.
So, I would plan on coming down here in the near future, and we're going to be doing the X1 healing machine. That's his first project. And we're going to actually show to the world what we're talking about tonight. And I just announced it to the world here on this show. This is a done deal.
And when
I'm going to look for a ranch down in Temecula to set up laboratories. That's happened since I saw you.
Mm.
Is that exciting?
Yes, congratulations. Absolutely.
Yeah, well, you're part of it. You're going to be working your little butt off. You are. That sounds... You're going to be down there. You're going to have the most exotic recording lab you've ever seen in the world. And we're going to be recording all aspects of what you do in sound, because your stuff, your chimes, your tuning forks, and we got a few minutes left. We got to hit those real quick. We're going to be recording these with the best equipment in the world, and you're going to be part of this program.
Well, I think, you know, the universe wants life to happen.
To you on the show, this is what's happened. Not happening, happened.
Yeah. Well, okay. Thank you very much for those,
okay,
those opportunities.
So, let's talk about your tuning forks a little bit.
Well, I make them in different octaves. I have a set here. If people would like to hear the golden mean, I'll play two tuning forks together here.
Now, play them a little bit.
To produce that sound. Just 1 second.
Okay.
And I'll put... Now I'll put three... Could you hear that okay?
I heard that very clear. That was loud and clear.
Now I'll put three together. These are... They have significant numbers in them as well that relate to ancient texts. And so I'm playing the vibrations.
Okay, hold on. We got a caller.
Okay.
Hi, Fred.
Yeah, hello.
It's Steve. How you doing? I got my Paradigm Hydrogen Quantum Sound Generator today. Hi, Randy.
Hi.
Hi. I just need to tell you, I'll get off the air. I had somebody in here. We played it for about 5 minutes. And I put her on the table. We cleared her instead of an hour in 20 minutes, totally. Everything came out. Chakras, everything balanced out in 20 minutes.
So what's the average time is an hour?
As an hour, yeah.
So with that connected with the amazing projector system.
Yes.
Is a 1-2-3 hit.
Yes, 1-2-3. I mean, everything was firing in that room like crazy, and... my client just went nuts. She just, we played it for about 5 minutes, and Randy, it's unbelievable. It just absolutely wonderful.
Did you move the chimes around in the room around the person, or how did you do it?
What I did, Randy, was I have the generator out here in the living room. We played it before we went into the room, and the room actually resonated from the sound generator, and it just cleared everything like... It was incredible. I mean, her energy cleared in 20 minutes. I mean, everything out of her body just gone in 20 minutes instead of an hour.
Well, and, one thing you can do is if you take the top screws out that hold the top plate that holds all the chimes,
yes,
you can lift the top plate off, and then you can move it around a person in the room.
Cool.
And that movement combined with the sound adds another interesting factor.
Well, I'll tell you, the projectors, everything were firing like crazy. I mean, everything was really, really working. I've never seen anything like it before in my life.
Well, I'm thrilled to hear that.
So, anyhow, I'll get off, but I just wanted to tell you what
it's Steve. That's Steve Barris.
Perfect timing. Thank you, Steve.
I mean, by God, thank you for coming on the show tonight. It's the perfect timing, exactly.
Thank you.
All right.
Talk to you later, guys. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye.
Okay, so go ahead, Randy.
Well, you know, I have a house full of chimes,
right,
but the one that gets the attention for just about everybody is the hydrogen one.
Yeah.
They say, what is that? What's going on?
I played that on the Art Bell show, and we sold out of those things. Do you remember that?
Are there sounds with the Balmer chime that remind you of anything you heard when you were on the Palladian ships?
Yeah, everything does. It's like when I was in the ship, it's like the sound of the engine, you know?
Well, that was a very important comment for me when you wrote that in your one of your books. I believe it was The Promise, I think. Was that the one where you mentioned that first?
I don't remember.
Anyway.
You probably are more on top of my books than I am, because I have to reread them to get knowledge, especially some of the quantum stuff I did in Rays of Truth when I was doing the N and M levels. I have to go back there. I don't remember all that stuff, you know.
Well, when you mentioned that about being played those sounds and the colors, I figured, you know, it'd be wonderful for people to be able to step into a room and have the sounds and the colors of hydrogen and take a bath in the sound and a bath in the color, you know.
Yeah, well, we're going to set that up.
That, to me, is like a very inspiring idea. So that's part of what I was pursuing with these Balmer chimes, is to begin to bring those sounds in a coherent way for people to experiment with.
Yeah. Now, when we get this new, we're looking this weekend, I have to go down and start finding this ranch. You know, there's a lot of land down in Temecula with buildings, et cetera. And it's affordable on my budget that this, you know, this investor has put into our program. So we'll have a place for you to stay, your own room and everything, and you can have a blast. And, Yeah, another caller. Go ahead, caller.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Hi, Dr. Bell. It's an honor. Hi, Randy.
Hi.
Is your website universalsong.net?
Yes, it is.
Okay, I have a quick question because I'm at the music part, and it's just showing the Inner Vision CD and the Music of Spheres. And to go along with the golden subject you were talking about, the golden light, I work a lot with golden light. Mm-hmm. Which CD of yours would you recommend for helping out, helping boost the meditations I do with the golden light?
Well, one that's a journey that I produced with Jan Sircone, a vocalist who teaches people how to empower their sound and their voice. Mm-hmm. And we're doing a number of recordings. So there's one called As Above, So Below.
Okay.
And that recording has different chimes on it and different unusual tunings, and the crystal bowls are all tuned in very interesting tunings.
Okay.
So it's quite a journey. So individual pieces on that, you can go into some pretty deep meditations with because of the sonic field that's being created.
Okay. And
the Inner Vision recording, the way that works, it's all played on solo harp, and these are the seven of the original Egyptian modes in the original Egyptian tuning system played on harp, and they found some Babylonian tablets that were like 3,000 years old that said this is how to tune the harp.
Wow.
So I used those exact tuning ratios in those modes, and then Joel Andrews is playing the harp, and he's channeling for 7 to 8 minutes in each of the seven modes. It's equivalent to just playing the white keys on the piano in certain configurations.
Okay.
And it's very basic, like a baseline from which to branch off into these other things.
Okay, and where would I find that CD?
You can just phone me.
Okay.
And my
phone... Go ahead and give your information.
Yeah, my phone number is 831-662-2594 in the Santa Cruz area of California. 831-662-2594. And you can email me at universalsong@yahoo.com, universalsong, S-O-N-G, at yahoo.com, and then universalsong.net for the website. So just call me, and I make everything up to order for people, but I do have the CDs available.
Okay. Thank you so much.
So both of those CDs are designed to be used as a tool rather than it's just a pure listening experience. It's designed as a enhancing meditations and group work and personal work.
Sounds great.
Yeah. Thank you for asking.
Yeah. Have a great night. Thank
you,
Dr. Bell.
For coming on.
Bye.
Yeah, Randy, give your information out, how to reach you on your websites and stuff. Some people don't actually have all that.
Shall I give it again?
Yeah, once again.
Okay, so the email is universalsong@yahoo.com, and then my phone is 831-662-2594. And then the website is universalsong.net.
So what are you going to be doing the next couple of weeks?
Mostly I'm going to be doing a class with Rowena Kreider on Sunday the 6th that involves the art, science, cosmology, and harmonics combined together. She's an amazing artist. Her website is creative-harmonics.org, creative-harmonics.org. And then I'm working on music toward the next CD productions that I want to get completed here before late fall. And I'm going through all kinds of compositions that I've written from different musical cultures and looking at what kinds of tuning systems they can be done in and different types of arrangements. So I want to do some very unique treatments of things that are extremely melodic and harmonic, rich music. It doesn't sound in any way like something that's New Age, but yet one of the things that I feel is missing. Pardon me?
Can you still play the horn and do that?
I can, but it's been 10 years, so I'm definitely going to have to do a little woodshedding.
Yeah, well, you better witch hunt because I'm going to need you to do some horn.
I spent a lot of years playing it. But one thing that I observed that a lot of music is missing is the melodic content. You know, that things have gotten very rhythmic and very textural and a lot of effects, but a lot of composers don't really have a good handle on melody.
Yeah, I agree. I totally
agree. And I've always been...
That kind of died in the 70s.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Things got cerebral and a lot of mechanical things and productions, but the, you know, not the kind of songs that you just sing the melody and you can ride on the melody. So in my, a lot of my musical aesthetics is very heavily weighted on the value of melody, that every single note in the melody is right in place.
Yeah. Well, were you and I'm going to have you on my next album. You know, I have that big record deal with Ravelson Records for an unlimited number of albums, which I haven't even told you about. Peter Ravelson's father did, like, Easy Rider and all those movies, and Samson, whose dad, he put the sound down to the, you know, he took the silent films and made it, you know, talk. So, you know, I have a huge record deal. I don't know if I've explained that to you or not, with this company, and Peter's a great friend of mine, and we're going to have this huge studio down in Temecula, and we'll have a place for you to stay and for your lovely lady to stay, Jan. And so we look forward in the future to doing some really wild stuff.
Well, this is, I believe, you know, the universe is asking us, you know, we've paid our dues in life and learned all these different things, and now's the time to make a contribution. You know,
we're doing that. And the nice thing is that it takes money to, you know, cover time, and somehow or other we seem to have that now. So I look forward to working with you.
Thank you.
It was great having you at the seminar and everything.
Yeah, thank you. I love the area where you are. Laguna Beach is just, what a beautiful place. You're going to keep that even if you...
This is the vortex. I've always been here. This is a temple. Now we got to have the work production place. So this is an extension of this. But before, this house was part of a place in Bel Air that we had to let go. So no, this place stays. It's got longevity. All right, we're out of town. Yeah, we're out of town.
Yeah, we are.
So we've had Randy Masters on tonight, explaining the back, you know, end of our seminar. And we thank everybody at bbsradio.com for helping us support these shows. We love the audience out there. We haven't done nothing yet, but we're going to do. So you have been listening to the Dr. Fred Bell's Health Science and Energy Show, and we're going to be like out of here.
Thank you again, Fred, for having me on.
Thank you, Randy.
All right.
Yeah.
Where would $5,000 per week take you? Discover the exact details of a simple and proven system that quickly puts $5,000 to $10,000 in many students' pockets every week. What's most amazing is that there are almost no computer skills required, and you can start pulling in cash automatically within just a few hours. We are absolutely convinced that our proven system will create massive wealth for virtually anyone, and we'll prove it. Go to bbscashflow.com now and get all the details. That's bbscashflow.com.